Welcome to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. My name is Sean Coleman. Hope wherever you are and wherever you're listening, you are having a great start to your day. This show is all about the Indiana Pacers and the Memphis Grizzlies, with the Grizzlies headed to Indiana, their third game in four nights. A pretty good matchup with another team in the East who is emerging as an Eastern Conference playoff contender. But it also has allowed for me the opportunity to speak with, across the NBA, one of my favorite NBA minds and one of the best writers out there. She writes for Indy Cornrows. You've seen me on Twitter talk about her a time or two over this past year, but just a wonderful, wonderful and talented writer, Miss Caitlin Cooper of Indiana Cornrows. How are you, or Indy Cornrows? How are you today, ma'am?
I'm doing well. And like I said before we hopped on, like, I'm excited. This is my first Grizzlies specific podcast, so I'm happy to talk to a new audience about a team that I really enjoy watching. So.
Well, and that's the reason why I wanted to have you on, your perspective on the Pacers, a team that is a lot of fun to watch in and of themselves, with the fact that, without just an absolute true star, they continue to find success due to a lot of schematics and schemes. And I know if you have not had the ability to check out Caitlin's writings, if you want schemes, schematics, the specifics of how a system really does add value, Caitlin is about as good as anybody at illustrating that. But, that's what we'll start out with, Caitlin. With the Grizzlies, one thing that the Grizzlies and Pacers have both kind of experienced this year is, an unfortunate amount of injuries. I know for the Grizzlies, Jaren Jackson Jr., Justice, Jonas as well. For Indiana, Miles Turner for a bit of time, but T.J. Warren, and of course now Oladipo turning into Caris LeVert, but LeVert's unfortunate absence as well. How has Indiana been able to continue finding success without some of their key contributors being available?
Right. So I think some of it is twofold. Number one, I think that Nate Bjorkgren over Nate McMillan has made a big difference in how they generate their offense. They lead at number one in rim frequency. They get into the paint a lot. And there's just a lot more flow than there was a year ago. I mean, I mentioned before we got on here that there was a lot of times last year where the Pacers might run like a basic stagger or a double drag, and then that was their offense, and it would get hitchy, and then they'd have to rely on like a one-on-one without, as you say, like a true star player. And now they flow from one action to the next with a lot of that going through Sabonis, and they've cut out a lot of the long mid-range twos. But on the other hand, they, even though they've carried over the same roster, I feel like they've gotten some good internal development out of several players. Brogdon's shooting 40% on pull-up threes, which is just nuts. Like, that's a 10% increase over last year. And his volume is pretty high on it too. Like, it's over four attempts per game. Jeremy Lamb came back from an ACL injury and somehow looks almost exactly the same. Hasn't missed a beat. Even had some games where he got over five free throw attempts a game, which in these early ones, and that barely happened last year. So for him to be seeking contact after that injury is huge. Doug McDermott too, getting over 40% of his shots at the rim, like, we all expect of a sharpshooter. And Miles, his feel finding cuts has really improved when Sabonis is posting up, and Sabonis just continues to get better. So I think that's how they've stayed afloat, is because they've gotten subtle improvements from several players, even though they'd clearly like to have TJ and Caris out there.
Agreed. And one thing that certainly helps, and, Caitlin, another thing I was really excited about was to get your perspective on Ja Morant. Ja Morant, obviously, just an extremely good rookie season. But this year, though it's only been six games, I talked about it after last game, he seems to have taken a step up to where he can impact the game on so many different levels, to the point that even if his scoring is not there, he can find ways to get teams involved. That's something that Brogdon has certainly improved upon, his play this year, averaging nearly 23 points and seven assists. That right there is 40 points from one player per night. What is the difference in how McMillan used him versus Bjorkgren has used him that's allowed for Malcolm to really step up in a time where the Pacers needed to? And how do you think him and Ja both compare in terms of how important they are to their respective teams?
Yeah, that's a great question. With Brogdon, it's interesting because last year he was pretty much the primary playmaker as well. I mean, he's a more reliable ball handler than Victor is. Plus, Victor had missed most of the season, and he's using most of the on-ball actions, where before Victor went down, they were using him and a lot of handoffs and cuts and off screens to get to on ball results. But his time of possession is still really high, just like it was last year. He's number two, or I mean, number, he and Sabonis are number two and three in touches per game. So he has a lot of opportunities to be the person that collects assists because of how much he has the ball. But I think a lot of it goes back to what I said before. Like, for instance, they'll run a double drag for Brogdon, then they'll connect that to a stagger, connect it to another stagger. So he doesn't even have to make like the best read because they're getting people open with the stuff that they're running. But he also has stepped up. He takes a lot of pride in having shifted since he left Milwaukee to the Pacers and becoming a point guard and being this team's point guard. With Jaw, I don't know if you saw, I actually tweeted yesterday, I watched the Memphis game versus San Antonio on Saturday, and I was just really stunned because the Grizzlies ran Horns double, which is a double ball screen at the top for Jaw Morant. I don't know how many times in that game. And I think he ended up racking up between points and assists, like 15 points just out of that play. And every time it was a different read. Like, he'd get into the paint one time and he's just so creative with the ball in his hands on top of the hops and the handles that he has. And he'd draw defenders one way, find the guy in the corner. Then he'd bring his defender up to him and he'd find the guy at the rim. He found Kyle Anderson at the top of the key, in addition to just his tremendous footwork when he was going left and kind of shaking LaMarcus Aldridge around. So yeah, Ja Morant is definitely just, you know, so athletic getting to the rim, and that's something I'm definitely watching between him and Miles Turner. And Brogdon isn't as good at finishing at the rim. More of his stuff's coming from the perimeter, so I think that would be the main difference, but definitely going to be a fun matchup to watch.
Completely. And the other thing that I'll say is this, is it always has certainly seemed to be the case with Indiana. That is thankfully happening with Taylor Jenkins. We'll get into this a little bit later in the show. But the depth, the need for depth, I believe that Indiana now has eight players or so that are averaging 20 or more minutes per game. But the McDermott, the Lambs, Justin Holidays as well, especially the wing depth, Indiana's finding so much success from that, and the Grizzlies are finding it through their defense. Do you feel like that's just always been a calling card for Indiana, but one that's needed in a market that you may not get the star, but you always have quality depth to have potentially advantageous lineups on the court at all times?
Right. They have to do it by committee, as you say. I mean, I think that is somewhat a market issue. You're not necessarily going to have the top guy, but they do have a lot of, I mean, their entire starting lineup is pretty much quality players. A point of contention in Indiana, a lot of people, including myself, would like Bjorkgren to lean into that depth a little bit more. Sabonis, about a week ago, I didn't check it this morning, he was leading the entire league in minutes per game, and he didn't even play in one of the overtimes that they played, so can't even blame it on that. And he's like number one or number two in distance traveled. Like, there's a heavy, heavy load being placed on Brogdon and Sabonis. And even though they're getting other guys' minutes, somehow it ends up eating into like Miles Turner's minutes, or before it was eating into Victor's minutes to get other players on the court. Sometimes Bjorkman leans on more of an eight-man rotation in games, sometimes even on second nights of back-to-back, and there's a real fourth-quarter fade problem with the Pacers. I mean, some of that last night, they gave up a 16-point lead to the Sixers in about an eight-minute stretch, and they only scored 8 points. And a lot of credit goes to Philadelphia last night because their 2-3 zone with Thybulle and Simmons up top was extremely formidable. But you'll also see that they start to wear out. They play such a high, like I've said, a high movement system on both ends of the floor, very aggressive defensively, pressuring up on the ball. And you can tell that there's such a drop off in their net rating from the third to the fourth quarter. So I would like to see them lean into that depth just a tad more, at least to get Brogdon and Sabonis not playing such huge chunks of minutes.
And that's the thing about it. The great thing with depth is it allows for you to give different looks. But one thing that has been consistent about Indiana, even in the era of the team before this current era, is very similar to what brought the Grizzlies success during the grit and grind era. I'll talk with Caitlin about that in a bit more coming up on the next segment of Locked On Grizzlies. This episode is brought to you by 1010. 1010 is an exclusive collection of 10 one-of-a-kind engagement rings designed by 10 of the most distinctive designers working today. Using only diamonds responsibly and sustainably sourced from Botswana, 10 design masters have each produced a uniquely beautiful diamond ring, launching exclusively on January 18th at BlueNile.com. This exciting limited edition collection of diamond engagement rings launches on January 18th, and you can preview it exclusively at BlueNile.com. The week is finally here. We are now less than a week away from the Super Bowl, the game against between the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Kansas City Chiefs that it clearly is the best sports day of the year. But if you're someone that likes to have fun beyond football, it also is a good day because it allows for you to focus on other sports that you might like to have fun watching. Basketball in full swing, hockey in full swing, baseball on the horizon, whatever sport you cheer for, whatever athletes you cheer for. The great thing about it is that you can add to your fun by having great places to make a bit of profit as well. And there's one place to go and only one place that we trust, and that's betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDON for your 50% welcome bonus. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on the action. Don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbooks experts. Visit our good friends and exclusive partner at BetOnline_AG to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Sign up for a free account and use the promo code LOCKEDON for your sign-up bonus. Hashtag BetOnline. Get more of the sports news you need in less time with our new Locked On Podcast Network, with our new Locked On Today podcast. Peter Bukowski hosts Locked On Today, a daily podcast breaking down the biggest stories with analysis from our local experts. Start your day with all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes. Subscribe to Locked On Today wherever you get podcasts. So, Caitlin, you know, of course, here in Memphis, we popularize the term grit and grind with the inside-out philosophy, defense first, going with the bigs, you know, with the Zach Randolph and Mark Gasol. But out east, I've always felt that Indiana, you know, it wasn't the exact same, but it was pretty similar. But for a decade now, and you're starting to see it really emerge with Turner and Sabonis, but when the Pacers have had their success, it's been with two bigs really being, you know, a featured part of their production, Roy Hibbert and David West, and now obviously Miles Turner and Sabonis. Has that been by design, or is it just kind of Indiana making the most of the deck that it's been given, you know, through trades and draft picks and things like that? What do you feel has made them focus on having success through, you know, anchoring two bigs?
Right. I think some of it's just like a case of them making it work. I mean, David West is arguably one of their biggest free agency signings they've ever had. And Frank Vogel, I mean, even last season with the Lakers, wants to design kind of the smash mouth system where looking at offensive rebounds and the locking down on defense, and that David West and Roy Hibbert really fit that along with the wings they had with Paul George and Lance Stephenson and George Hill. This go around, you know, they get Sabonis in return, in addition to Victor in the trade that sent Paul George to Oklahoma City. And Miles at the time is starting, and he's the guy that they drafted. And yet Sabonis is really blossoming in that first season off the trade. And I think it was more a case in this instance of like, hey, we have these two really good players, and we need to figure out a way that we can play both of them at the same time, even though it isn't always necessarily ideal, but it's looking about as good as it, I mean, arguably as good as it ever has. Miles deserves quite a bit of credit for that, I think. Inserted himself into the defensive player of the year conversation on one end of the floor, but the other, like I mentioned, he's just, you saw in prior seasons, he just wasn't very good at knowing where to move into space when he didn't have the ball. And I don't know if that's like having conversations with Bjorkgren, but he did say last year he wasn't very comfortable in his role under McMillan, and that there had been some miscommunications, that they weren't on the same page, but he could still stand to be more consistent with it. But there have been strides there, and each of them have kind of added a little bit to their game to make it work so that if Sabonis does have the ball, Miles knows how to operate off of it, and vice versa. Sabonis is making a lot of sacrifices on the defensive end. It's not that he's a lockdown defender, but so that Miles can stay in the paint and be blocking every shot in sight. He's the one that's up top, hedging side pick and rolls and diverting those guys away from the rim and really pressuring up and defending at the line of the ball and having to close out to speedier fours, which is adding to the load that he has to carry. But both of them have been playing, I think, as close to the archetype that the Pacers need them to be this season so far. But they have had struggles against, without TJ Warren, guarding quicker fours and bigger wings. They don't have a lot of guys who can have the heft. Like, as good as Justin Holiday is, he doesn't have a lot of heft to defend that type of a person in the post. And then when they play bigger, they don't always have the ability to close out. So I'm somewhat cautiously optimistic. I want to see what it looks like in the playoffs. We didn't get that opportunity last year because Sabonis was out with the plantar fasciitis. But like I said, I think it looks as good as it should be expected to have looked, much better than it did last season.
And the thing about it is here in Memphis is that, you know, that philosophy is good in terms of making a team that may not be able to attract stars competitive. And it worked for Memphis with seven straight playoff appearances. But I never really considered them a true title contender because they never could get it right on the wing. But that is one thing Indiana has done over the past 12 years or so. Danny Granger to Paul George to Victor Oladipo to Malcolm Brogdon. And, you know, you were thinking that you might get it with Warren and LeVert. The thing is, Caitlin, they've done such a good job at replenishing the need for a primary source of production on the wing. The problem is that just unfortunately due to injuries to Granger and Oladipo and now LeVert, they've never been able to combine both of them together. And though they were within just a few minutes of making the finals, you know, earlier last decade, they've had so much success finding those wings, but have not had a lot of luck with having two of them together at the same time. I imagine that's been both fun to see, but also a bit frustrating as time has developed over the past decade plus.
Yeah, absolutely. Cursed in that extent. I mean, it's the most improved player curse. Half those wings won those awards, and then within a season were injured and couldn't play most of the following year. It's interesting too, because there used to be a big narrative about whether Paul George and Danny Granger could play together back in that time period. And now you look at it in hindsight and it's like, of course two wings can play together. And wouldn't Danny Granger make this ideal stretch four in today's NBA? But yeah, the Caris and TJ Warren one is obviously unfortunate. TJ had been dealing with foot issues, plantar fasciitis in the other foot, and then ended up fracturing the right. And he had such good momentum in the bubble. Really had a breakout there, extending his game out to the three-point line, and then came back. And even when he was trying to play, he just looked rather hobbled. And then, you know, very unfortunate for Caris LeVert in some respects, but also, like, it's kind of crazy to consider the fact that James Harden forcing himself out of Houston might have actually saved his life. So I'm very excited to see what it looks like once everybody's healthy. And assuming after you just mentioned all that, I'm like, well, I hope they are all healthy at some point. We haven't exactly seen a lot of that in Pacer history lately.
But the thing is that, you know, it truly is. I mean, when you think about it, Granger, George, Oladipo, all three, and now LeVert, all of them. Just unfortunately, I'm not really wanting to say there's a curse, but it appears like there is, unfortunately, for Pacers fans. But the other side of those things, though, is that I think that this also illustrates a very needed, you know, aspect of operating a team in a small market like Indiana, which we hope we now finally have here in Memphis, is the wherewithal from a front office to make the needed moves to keep the team competitive when, unfortunately, things just do not work out. And that's through building team through trades. And I think that there's no team in the NBA that has had, you know, as much consistent success with, you know, they haven't got the star, but in terms of remaining competitive through trades, the Pacers have certainly done that. I think that that certainly is a very good compliment to them, but it's something that you absolutely have to have, a competent front office in a small market. And I think you can speak to that being a Pacers fan over the past decade plus.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Kevin Pritchard deserves a lot of credit since he's taken over here and finding, they like to say that they love the unloved players, that, you know, TJ Warren had kind of fallen out of favor there in Phoenix to the point where, you know, Phoenix also sent the Pacers a pick to take him. And then he explodes in the way that he does. Victor had, you know, been moved by Orlando and by Oklahoma City and then becomes an all-star in the first season. Sabonis eventually also develops into an all-star. Malcolm Brogdon, who wasn't really considered to be a point guard playing off ball alongside Giannis and Eric Bledsoe, comes to the Pacers, and now he's blossoming into a point guard. And yeah, I mean, in order to stay competitive, those are the types of things you have to do. I mean, I think that the Victor trade a few weeks ago was somewhat controversial because he was playing a little bit better. And I know that, you know, he has a longstanding fan affinity going back to when he played for IU, but at the same time, he didn't want to entertain extension talks. The Pacers reportedly offered him the most that they could offer right now in an extension, which was only 25% raises. So he wanted to go for the max contract. And I respect that that's what he wanted to do, but the Pacers then, as you say, go out, they find Caris LeVert, who's younger, on a cost control deal so that they wouldn't have to move somebody else if they go into the luxury tax, and it allows them to stay competitive. And they're hoping once again that, you know, hey, maybe when Caris is no longer having to take, you know, a step back with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving and James Harden now, obviously going to be taking more prominent roles, and he can be shining a little bit more with the Pacers, that he'll do like what TJ Warren and others have done, that he'll play his best basketball for the Pacers. And they've had a lot of success with that.
It's been very admirable to watch. You know, it's just, like I say, it's just one of those things where the Pacers, you know, they're so fun to cheer for, especially being from a smaller market like Memphis. I know others have noticed that as well here in the Memphis market, but it's just like, dad burn it, you just could not get the health to be there. We've had a little bit of that too with Rudy Gay not working out here in Chandler Parsons, obviously, as well. But, you know, it is at least something to look forward to. And that's what we'll discuss coming up in the third segment. I'll talk with Caitlin a little bit more about just the craziness, but thankfully the positive ending that happened with Caris LeVert, and we'll get into tonight's matchup between the Pacers and the Grizzlies. It's hard to believe the month of February is already here, but here we are, and this is obviously one of the coldest months for many of us across the nation. Well, of course, when it comes to the cold, that could be the most inopportune time for you to have car issues. But if you do, I can't tell you myself how to repair your car, but I can tell you where you need, where you can go to get the parts you need if you need repairs, and that's rockauto.com. Rockauto.com is a great source for a variety of reasons. It's easy to use. Within a few clicks of a button, you'll be able to get what you need, and it's likely that you'll find what you need due to the fact that regardless of the make and model or the part that you need, rockauto.com is likely to have it. Now, if you're someone who does your own car repairs, you need someone to do your repairs, or you do repairs for others on a consistent basis, rockauto.com is a great source. A family-owned business that's been in operation for over 20 years, they know car parts typically fall outside of someone's budget, so they keep things economically feasible. If you go to rockauto.com right now, let them know that the Locked On Podcast Network sent you. Rockauto.com, amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the car parts you'll ever need. Visit rockauto.com today. East meets West in Locked On NBA Tuesdays. Wes Goldberg, Warriors beat writer for the Mercury News and host of Locked On Warriors, and David Ramil, host of Locked On Heat, tackle the biggest NBA stories of the day coast to coast. To subscribe to the Locked On NBA podcast wherever you get podcasts. So, Caitlin, not trying to, you know, focus too much on, you know, the history of the, just the unfortunate incidents that have happened in terms of the Wings, but you had a firsthand, you know, account watching up close what kind of unraveled with Caris. Just, you know, how crazy of a situation was it, and how thankful are many, including Caris, obviously, in Indiana, with how a crazy situation actually wound up being very advantageous and positive for him and everybody involved?
Right. So obviously when the trade initially happened, I think everybody thought James Harden was going to be moved, but I thought at some point in the season that Victor would be traded, but I wasn't expecting it to be part of that trade. So you're kind of reacting to that shock. And then as the week went on, there was a lot of people kind of questioning, you know, why hasn't this trade been made official yet? I had people in my mentions asking, like, what's going on here? Is the trade still going through? I'm like, well, it has to, because Brooklyn's already introduced James Harden. If the whole thing doesn't go through as designed, then it falls apart. Then there started to be rumblings that, hey, there's an issue with somebody's physical with regards to the Pacer Rocket portion of the trade. And then the Pacers obviously released the statement that they've found a mass on his kidney, which was obviously really disheartening for him. I know that Scott Agnes, formerly of The Athletic and now runs his own newsletter, did an interview with the doctor who performed the surgery, which was really good. And they talked about the fact that, like, because Caris was asymptomatic, he wasn't having pain in his back or anything, there wouldn't have been a reason for Brooklyn to look for that, other than the fact that because he got traded, he had to go through a physical. Unfortunately, the Pacers were very thorough in what they did. Caris commended them for that. And they found it. And like I said earlier, like, James Harden forcing his way out literally might have saved his life, because they talked about how that type of cancer can spread to other organs throughout the body if it isn't detected early. So very big there. And then just the way that the Pacers handled it, I really appreciated. Kevin Pritchard did a presser that night after they announced it, and Caris had given his statement, and they just really just made it about humanizing Caris. Like, it wasn't a thought that they were going to back out of that trade, and obviously they probably knew that, hey, we've caught this early, and they probably consulted with the medical team that he would be able to come back and play. But the fact that they kept it and didn't turn it into, like, just you know, trade dynamics and made it about his health and his long-term health was really impressive to watch. And I'm looking forward to seeing him get back on the court, and what a great story that is hopefully going to turn out to be as he continues to get healthy.
He's a fun player to watch, and, you know, just especially in last year's bubble, him and Spencer Dinwiddie, seeing them play without the stars, it was a lot of fun. So just wish him nothing but the best for you and the fans and for him as well when it comes to health. But looking at tonight's game, you know, I think that there are plenty of similarities between the Pacers and the Grizzlies, especially when it comes to two teams that are very good at, you know, finding their shots within the arc, especially in the paint. But I think the advantage that the Pacers have, and it's going to be interesting to see if the Grizzlies, you know, will have, as of this recording, will have Jonas Valanciunas back. But I think the Pacers certainly have a bit of it more of an advantage over the Grizzlies in the paint than most teams would. Do you feel like going into tonight's matchup that may be on both producing in the paint on offense and defending in the paint, that could be an area where the Pacers could really find some success against the Grizzlies?
Right. I mean, this is definitely battle points in the paint. These are the number one and two teams in that category. And like I said before, I think over the weekend, not to go on too much of a tangent, but like a lot was made out of the fact that Miles Turner has struggled against Joel Embiid. A weakness of his is defending his own position. And the entire Sixers game was like Miles Turner versus Joel Embiid. I'm like, no. What's more exciting is watching two players being able to go at each other with their strengths. And I feel like I said earlier, like Ja Morant versus Miles Turner's rim protection, I think is going to be a really fascinating back and forth. Defensively, the Pacers allow people to get into the paint. It's mostly about Miles Turner being able to lock it down once they get there. So that, and then they don't allow a lot of threes, but opponents tend to shoot a high percentage, which is interesting because I know Memphis hasn't really been the strongest team in three-point shooting aside from Desmond Bane's otherworldly field goal percentages, but they're either running people off the line or giving them practice shots. So because of how they're so aggressive in the gaps and what types of rotations they get. So I think the three-point line might also be an interesting one. I noticed in the game against San Antonio that Memphis was doing a lot of switching on the high pick and rolls with Aldridge and then doubling him in the post. So I'm assuming that's how they'll cover Sabonis as well. So it could come down to, can the Pacers hit those types of spot up opportunities? Because both teams are just, you know, Memphis number two in defensive rating overall. I could see where it could come down to the Pacers being able to knock down shots.
Yeah, and that was the other thing that I was going to throw out was that, you know, the thing to me that's going to make the big difference in the game is when it comes to the kickouts, if the paint's not there for either the Pacers or the Grizzlies, like the Pacers' ability to shoot the three better concerns me, but the Pacers' inability, or not necessarily inability, but the fact that surprisingly they do allow a lot of threes to be made, I think works into Memphis's, you know, plans. And Caitlin, just in you know, in however much you've seen the Grizzlies play, you know, I will say the shooting of the Pacers still does concern me even outside of Brogdon. But take away, you know, Ja, take away, you know, Kyle and the known players. Is there anybody on this Grizzlies team, especially when considering the wings, that when you look at them, you're like, okay, this guy really concerns me with the weaknesses of Indiana? Is there an X factor tonight on the Grizzly side that could concern you if he gets going?
Offensively or defensively?
Both. We'll put you on the spot.
Well, based on how Jaw was picking apart those horn sets, pretty much anybody that's open in the corners, I mean, because like I said, the Pacers don't allow a lot of three-point attempts, but they do give up and their share quite a few open ones. So it's just amazing to me that Desmond Bane shooting what he is from the three-point line as a rookie. That's just nuts. But, I mean, defensively, what they did on Saturday against DeMar DeRozan and Derek White, like if that's how they're going to defend Brogdon and whether it be Jeremy Lamb or Doug McDermott or whoever it is, then I think you could get into a little bit of trouble there. That seems like a very basic answer, but also one thing that I would point out is just the team as a whole, that I did notice that Memphis was also mixing in some 3-2 zone and 2-3 zone. And that's kind of become a bit of a buster for the Pacers. They rank like 26th in zone offense, in part because they do have this beautiful free-flowing player movement. And when you go into zone, they can't do that anymore. And they were really searching for shots last night. That's been the case against the Raptors. I think that that could be an X factor almost as much as any player, because their offense just grinds to a halt lately when a team goes into a zone.
And that's been the big thing about the Grizzlies, is that it's just not the different looks that they can give teams. The switching, as you mentioned, that's something that Coach Taylor Jenkins talks about in the media sessions a lot, is the different switches that they'll do. And that's the added element that's come from our defense. It's not just the opportunistic nature of it in which we're creating turnovers, but now we're really finding success. We saw it against Devin Booker. You know, we saw it against Ben Simmons the game before, and you saw it against DeMar DeRozan. Hopefully, you know, that'll keep going. But that's something that's really helped out. But Caitlin, and I'll finish with this. I can't get away because, you know, Sabonis, you know, I don't know if you've noticed on my end or not, Sabonis is my number one. He's the player that I love the most outside of the Grizzlies. So I would be failing myself if I didn't ask. When it comes to Sabonis, obviously you've seen the development of his game. He seems to be a top 25 player. Does he take that next step in adding? What does he need to do, you feel, to take the next step to really be on the level of maybe an Embiid, a Jokic, and others, to be a big who, despite how really, really good he is, can also continue to be that good in the playoffs, which this Pacers team needs to really be a contender over the next few years in the East?
Right. So, excellent question. I think that with Jokic, Jokic is kind of like supercomputer Sabonis. As good of a passer and playmaker as Sabonis is, you watch Jokic and it's like, you know, holy cow, that guy, he can shift the pieces really easily. He sees plays before that they happen. Some of it with Sabonis goes back to like the Raptors, I think is a great example. The Pacers and the Raptors run so many similar plays that when they played that mini series a week ago, you could tell that Nick Nurse said it was just another game, but I really questioned that because they were using exaggerated defensive schemes and were calling out the Pacers' plays, which were also their own plays. But Sabonis went like 1 of 10 from the field, and they were sending 2 to 3 bodies to him over and over again, and he made the correct pass. I think he had like 12 potential assists in the game, but his teammates are going to have to knock some of those down to open things up for him. He's going to his right hand a little bit more in the post, which was big because last year he was barely turning over that shoulder. He really likes to get to his left. I think becoming more ambidextrous has helped him this year a lot because Bjorkren's running some more inverted sets, which allows him that even if he isn't shooting the three at a high level, which he has made some of those this year, but it's pretty up and down. Like last night against the Sixers, I believe he was 0-5 from three, that it allows him to eat up that space. You use an inverted pick and roll, then the rim protector's still coming out there and he can drive past him or space the floor with his playmaking. I think that's a big one. I think another comparison, obviously Joel Embiid's a far more intimidating defender than Sabonis is, and some of that comes down to his measurables. Miles Turner's wingspan, like I think by comparison, Jason Tatum actually has a longer wingspan than Sabonis does. So he's just not going to deter at the rim to that degree. I think the defense isn't always fitting what he needs to be as a defender in comparison to last year's more conservative scheme. But Sabonis is just such a unique player. I don't think he gets quite enough attention nationally for exactly how unique he is. I mean, the Pacers have him doing stuff on ball. Like I mentioned, he brings the ball up the floor. His screening away from the ball is key. He makes tremendous reads, very smart and polished. He's very physical in addition to all those things. Gets to the line, puts a lot of pressure on the rim. He's the number one reason why they have such a high rim frequency in the points in the paint. And just his ability to keep the offense flowing. Like he may not be making like a water polo pass like Jokic to the opposite corner, but he's going to keep shuffling you through with dribble handoffs and getting you to a shot when the offense bogs down. That definitely showed up against the Heat in the playoffs last year when he wasn't there. Not only was he not available to be crunching mismatches when the Heat were switching, but there was just so many hitches because he wasn't there at the elbows to keep it flowing into the next action. And that led to a lot of, inefficient one-on-one play.
I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to waste your time with speculative trade offers. But you know, 18 months ago, before we got Brandon Clark, and I don't think Clark's Sabonis. Sabonis was my dream to have next to Jaren Jackson Jr. If the Grizzlies were to ever get someone like him, that would be awesome to pair with Ja and Jaren. I'm very jealous y'all get to see Sabonis on a nightly basis. But Caitlin, it has been an absolute privilege to be able to spend some time with you. I'm just, you know, I'm getting into your mind, getting some thoughts on the Grizzlies and the Pacers, and I I'll end with this then. Overall, when it comes to, we talked about Sabonis, but speaking of the Grizzlies, in a small market with a point guard, you know, as their best player, Jaren's development, just from your observation, the overall potential of this Grizzlies team, do you feel that, you know, with how the NBA is changing, that the Grizzlies truly have one of the better cores out there and that, you know, title contention certainly could be within the realm of possibilities for them within the next 3 to 5 years?
No, I really like the Grizzlies' potential. I mean, like I said, I could gush a lot about Ja Morant. I mean, I wish that he had played some more games because I feel like he would have a really good shot at being an all-star this year if he doesn't have a good shot anyways. And you know, Jaren's ability. I love how they play inside out with Ja being the person on the inside and Jaren a lot of times being the person on the outside. And something that we didn't even mention, which has actually been a shortcoming for the Pacers, they've just done such a good job of drafting. And that's so important for a small market team to hit on those picks and be able to get high level contributions from players who are on low salaries. I mean, you look at it by comparison to the Pacers. I mean, they just this season traded TJ Leaf to the Thunder and basically, you know, exchanging, this is going to sound harsh, but trash for trash. I mean, they took back a G League player, had to send a second round pick to get off of that asset. And he was their number 18 pick. Goga, they draft a center. And, you know, they already have two centers on the roster who are eating up a lot of the minutes. Aaron Holiday's been decent for them, but they haven't hit on in the draft to the extent that the Grizzlies have where they're getting contributions out of those guys. So if they continue to grow and they continue to make picks like that, I really like the potential of where the Grizzlies are going.
And I think that it goes to show that while there is different ways to continue to construct a roster over time, there has to be something that you're very good at if you were the leadership of a small market team. For the Pacers, it's been trades. For the Grizzlies, it's been the draft picks. Hopefully, for both of our sakes, that will continue to be the case. But, Caitlin, obviously, Memphis is a huge basketball town. I know so many folks who, besides the Grizzlies, just love to get as much quality content as possible. Where can our listeners find you, and do you have any big things coming, you know, over the next a few months, so going as we continue into the first half of this basketball season?
Right. So they can find me on Twitter. My handle is @C2_Cooper. And then I'm just, my entire home is at Indy Cornrows. I write over there about once or twice a week, typically analysis pieces. Over the weekend, I looked at some of their struggles defending bigger wings, recorded a podcast about the Sixers meltdown last night. And I usually just go wherever the games take me. Might have to look into something about some of the Pacers' zone struggles, given what's been occurring in some of these games lately. But yeah, I mean, if they love basketball, I hope that they'll come over and read some of my stuff.
The biggest compliment I think that I can give to a writer of another team is that I would love to see what that person's perspective would be about the team that I follow. And that's how I feel every time that I read Caitlin's work, just some of the best work that's out there. But Caitlin, we certainly would love to have you again sometime if you'll stick with us for just a second after we're done recording. But can't thank you enough for taking the time to join us, and great perspective as always.
Hey, thanks again for having me.
For Caitlin Cooper, my name is Sean Coleman. You can follow me at StatsSAC, the show at Locked On Grizz, the podcast, wherever podcasts are available, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, Google Podcasts, the podcast app on your phone. Obviously, tonight, looking forward to another big game for the Grizzlies against the Pacers. Hopefully, we'll get a needed victory, but enjoy the game, and we'll talk to you again soon here on the Locked On Grizzlies podcast.